Hello and welcome to the Filmmakers Roundtable here on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7. My name is Domenico. I'm a local artist who just got into filmmaking recently, and I'm joined here by two other filmmakers. We have Susanna Darwin and Mace as well. Mace is a filmmaker based here in Florida that's directed two feature films, one filmed in North Carolina and one was filmed here in Florida, actually in St. Pete. We can talk about that later. Susanna Darwin is a filmmaker, writer, artist, lawyer, and activist. She has produced three narrative short films since 2012, one in Chicago and two here in St. Pete. Her most recent film, the anti-authoritarian comedy Flag Act, has screened at more than 40 film festivals in North America, which is an impressive feat. And Europe. And has won numerous awards. Susanna has been active with racial justice, equity, urban forestry, and voter mobilization in St. Petersburg since moving here in 2018. She lives with her wife and two cats in the Euclid St. Paul's neighborhood and has flown the Ukrainian flag in her front yard almost every day for the past 3 years. Welcome, both of you. I guess I didn't say anything about myself, very, very, very much about myself. I'm a local musician under the artist on the moniker Boy in the Rain. And a few years ago, I got a grant from the St. Pete Arts Alliance to do a film based around a piece that I wrote, and I am now obsessed with filmmaking. So here we are. It's so excited to be here.
Thank you.
For this first session, we're going to talk about the general filmmaking process. We'll start with a little prompt here. What is your typical approach to developing a film concept from initial idea to script stage? Who wants to go first?
Like from an idea to a script, like what happens in the middle?
Right. Just the approach, like the artist's approach, right? Like what is your approach to filmmaking from that initial conception to when you start filming?
I would say there should be several rewrites. People should look over your script. Don't just read it and assume that it's perfect. It takes a while, but sometimes you can just jump right into it and see what happens. I am so spontaneous. Let me just be honest and stop faking it. I just do it, and whatever happens, happens.
What's so interesting about this question is artists are so different, so diverse, right? So for me, it started with music, right? The concept of the film started with the emotion I felt when I wrote the piece, right? And from there, it developed into a story, right? That's my process. And then as you start putting together the different elements, the story starts to take shape and take form, and now there are people, and there's a setting, right? And now it took on a much larger story with a lot more meaning and depth than the raw emotion that I started with. So for me, that's how the piece, you know, evolves, right? Susanna, what about you? I loved Flag Act, first of all, right?
Thank you.
And I'm so curious about how you conceptualized that film, right? Like, where did you come up with this idea? I know there's a lot going on politically, right?
Right.
But how did you come up with the idea of focusing on this one individual and her struggle?
Well, I think part of it is that it's aspirational. It's that I want to be as brave as she is in the film, basically all the time. And when I got the idea for the film, it was the very initial kernel was imagining this woman who is of a certain age, who in my head at that point had four cats, okay? And she had these comic names for them. But I knew, as a filmmaker, I wasn't going to be able to afford a cat wrangler, especially with four cats. So four cats became two birds. And then, you know, in the process I was writing, and it's become this political story, and it's basically structured like a joke. You know, it's, you know, beep, 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 punchline.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah, yeah.
And then as we're assembling the cast and crew, a potential first assistant director said to me, well, have you got a bird wrangler? And I went, uh-oh. And so two birds became a painting, and the painting, like, caps the politicization of the film. And so we shot it in 2023 at the end of January, so it's just 2 years ago. And within 10 days of shooting this film, that's fiction, the legislature in Tallahassee put up legislation to limit the flags that people in Florida could fly.
Wow.
And that's what this film is about. That was weird.
Yeah, it's like a... Yeah, very, what's the word?
Prescient, I think is
very
the word.
very Nostradamus of you, right?
Yeah,
very,
right.
Yeah.
So part of it was having the idea of this character and wanting her to speak, and I wanted her to be alone, but I didn't want her to seem, you know, like clinically mentally ill. So she's got to have somebody to talk to. So first she's talking to the cats, and then she's talking to the birds, and the conversation is essentially the same because ultimately she's having a confrontation with the police.
Right.
And the casting piece to me was, you know, that took a lot of thought because, so she's an older white woman, and the cops are a black cop and a white cop. Mm. It was going to be different if she was African American.
Right.
And it was going to be different if the bad cop was black versus white. The casting was important. I also want my films to look like the town I want to live in. And this one happens to be half black and half white. And moving from Chicago, which is basically roughly a third black, white, Latino, and then of course a significant Asian population, I want there to be mixing. I want all of us to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Diversity is a great thing. And that's part that went into the casting of the film.
It's really interesting. I love how your approach really started with this character, right? The conceptualization of a character and how that character would respond to this political environment. So that's...
But then the great thing about the casting was, and I love this about actors, is that you can hear the voices in your head all day long, but then you get an actual human being bringing the dimension to it, mm-hmm. their imagination, their skill, their body language. Oh my God. It's my favorite magical element is to work with actors because they bring so much.
And I have to say, for a small short film, the acting was really good. And I loved even the character. If you haven't seen Flag Act, you should definitely go out and try to find it and see it. And we'll talk about how people can do that later.
Right.
But There's a character that recurs in the story and is just really into the drama that is unfolding. And I thought that that little comic relief of a character added so much. And then that acting was good too. They were all great, you know?
Yeah, she represents the audience. And before we wrote her in, the film was way too hothouse. It was very kind of enclosed.
A little intense.
And so she provides some relief, like you mentioned, but she's also us. You know, we're watching what's happening.
Right. So this brings me to when we're talking about all these actors and all those elements, this brings me to the next question, which is about budget, right? Like, how do you balance your vision as an artist with that sort of practical side of budgeting and production limitations?
I haven't had a big budget yet, and I have just used money that I acquired in ways, right? And I think at this table, I'm going to serve as the person that made mistakes, right? Like, I'm still starting out in my career, so I can vouch for things that you should probably be aware of before you start doing these things. But I was so confident when I started doing this, because I've always wanted to do this my whole life. I never saw a movie that was like my aha movie. I don't remember my first movie. I just always wanted to make movies for whatever reason. It was just something that called to me. So I was so eager to jump in on it because I started when I was 17. I'd only done a few sets before. I didn't do things that were super important, but I was trying to observe what the directors were doing. I was trying to observe the whole time. And I figured in my twisted artist, lonely kid brain, like, oh, I can totally do this. This is so simple. This is exactly, all you have to do is tell people what to do, right? And I wrote not like I had a budget. I didn't want any limitations for myself. So I just wrote like I was going to be able to accomplish all of it. Now I'm not as optimistic about my films. I'm very careful with the approach I'm going to take. And when I'm going to do my next feature film, I'm going to make sure I do have a budget and I do look into grants and stuff like that. And I think that I just didn't hesitate. I didn't take a moment and explore my options. So I was working at Panera Bread. I was like, yeah, I was a teenager. I was about to graduate, but I was still also in high school. So I just edited stuff for like $30, like totally sold myself short with things and then saved money from working or whatever. But that's the thing, is it took so long for me to finish this movie because I would have to stop and wait till I got more money. That's what happened with David Lynch when he released Eraserhead. He was working on it for 7 years when he was in film school. And it was because he kept having to self-fund, and that happens with a lot of filmmakers. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, But you could be like me with my second film. When I thought I budgeted correctly, it was during COVID, and we shot it in North Carolina in an isolated house. And of course, I got tests from everyone and, you know, all that beforehand. But we did have several people drop out before because they tested positive, and I only had 2 days to replace half my cast, including my main actor, after having it planned for 9 months. And so I ended up having to do all these things extra, like having to pay more because I had to hire more people. And basically the budget I had created before did not represent the budget that this was going to become. And I had to pay like $3,000 for an Airbnb. We had to stay longer. It was a whole thing. Well, I ended up spending the next 2.5 years paying off that debt. So that's the thing. I think I can't really speak on budget right now because I'm still learning. And I guess that's what I can bring to this table is you're obviously more experienced. I want to learn from you, and I want to learn from you as well. And I know a lot more now. But before I go into my next film, now I'm going to take the proper steps for that, because it really is, it will ruin your life if you don't take those proper steps. And that's why I'm just releasing this film now, 3.5 years later, because I just didn't feel comfortable doing it before until I got all the past stuff taken care of.
But all that's so important, isn't it? Being able to create a film with no budget is powerful, right? There's a lot of, you have to deal with these intense constraints, right? And so what you're able to do is you're able to really press the limits of your creativity to really find solutions that are unique. I think that's like really valuable. And I think our producer, Karen, has done such a good job at putting this trio together, because we're so diverse, right? So you, Mace, you're fairly young, you're in your 20s, right? So are sort of in the beginning of your filmmaking career, and you've hit it hard. It sounds like you've really doubled down and you're going for it. You're starting a film career, right? I dabbled in film when I was in high school as well. I had some great opportunities to work in high school, the school's TV production studio. I competed in the Guerrilla Film Festival here in Tampa Bay. I jumped on any opportunity I could, but then I deviated because I took a different career path, and so now I'm back into it. And Susanna, you've been doing this for a while. You studied film.
Right.
You went to school, and you've made some very successful films that have hit the film festival circuit. So I think this is really cool that Karen has put us all together, because we have these diverse perspectives, right, of where we are in this. And I think it goes to show that as an artist, film is always a tool that you can use. And so I really like that, Mace, you talked about your challenges with budgets, because I think that's actually a great learning experience. And I feel like most films go over budget. I don't know, Susanna, my film, my budget was $1,000. I got a $1,000 grant. And of course I'm going to go over, right? So my goal was I can do it for $2,000, right? Do half of it from the grant and then half of my own money. And I was pretty good. I just went a little bit over, but I feel like most films go over budget. Susanna, what is your experience?
Well, first I want to say that, yeah, I'm 60, but I also make mistakes. Okay,
so good to hear.
So,
the mistake thing, we're all making mistakes. It's a whole part of the process.
It's going to happen. And, I mean, one of the things with regard to budget is that to be prepared to do pretty much everything. But one thing that I did learn, and I resolved after the third film, I need to hire somebody to do food. Okay, and if you feed your crew and cast really well, they are so happy. I mean, so many crew members in particular have been on sets where lunch is bottled water and goldfish.
Okay, Little Caesar's pizza.
Right, again and again and again.
Yes.
So you know, if you spring for it, also spring for the person that is in charge of figuring out, oh, you've got these many people on the set this day, you're going to need this many meals, you're going to need this much in terms of craft. And I have done that, but that's not really where my skills are. I mean, where my skills are in the writing piece, the planning piece, and I like the solitude of that, but I also love the sociability of being on the set. And part of the planning element is developing a budget and doing the fundraising. And one of the hard parts in 2017, the administration sort of it raised the threshold for what individual donors needed to be donating to nonprofits in order to write it off on your taxes. Because it used to be that you could say, oh, you can make a donation and write it off on your taxes. And it didn't even have to be that much. Mm-hmm. Now it's not worth it. It's like going through all the rigmarole of securing fiscal sponsorship and so forth. It's just not worth it anymore because you can't make that claim credibly. Now, you can do it if you're reaching out to folks that are making basically a donation through their corporation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, that piece of it is really challenging. And mm-hmm. and I admire that you've made a feature on, it sounds very low budget. I've got a very good friend who's a director up in Chicago who made a feature that was a musical.
Shockingly. That's bold. Yeah,
that is bold. Right? Sounds terrifying.
Yeah, she did it. She did it. I think it was for less than $25,000, which is astonishing. And you can watch Jamie and Jesse Are Not Together, I think, on either Amazon Prime or Netflix.
I like that title.
Yeah.
That's a good title.
That's
cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I, one more thing about budget. Yeah. We paid a thrift store, an antique store, because I wanted to do a period film. So anyway, but we did pay an antique store like $250 just to rent whatever we could. And that was a lot of money for them because they're just this small little town. And so we just took stuff for like a week and then brought it back.
That's smart thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. You had to get resourceful with things like that. And I really like what you said about the food, because I feel like that was a really big issue for me when shooting this film, because there was a communication barrier, because there were so many different diets and stuff. This is my first time working with like people, like over 20 people. Like I had all these people from different states. Anyway, the thing with the food is that there's so many different diets. Some people were vegan. Some people, you know, had issues with their stomach or whatever. I'm trying to acquire all this stuff, but we're in the middle of nowhere. These people are stuck in the 1960s here in North Carolina. And this town, my dad grew up in this town. There's not a lot of options there for food and stuff. And so having to get this stuff for these diets was so difficult. Luckily, I have an aunt that lives in North Carolina that was able to help me cook for them, and they did, like, it did improve like the tension or anything on set, because it's so important, because that's your mood is, you know, driven by your nutrients, and you got to be nourished, and if you're hungry and you're on set for 8, 9, 10 hours sometimes. But I had bought all this food, like salads, pre-made things, put them in coolers, but people didn't realize the coolers had food in them. I don't know why. And it was cold too. So like outside, it was like 60 degrees. Sometimes it got colder at night. So they stayed cold all day with ice in them and everything. And people just kept putting their gear on the coolers. But I remember people kept complaining, you're not buying us anything to eat throughout the day. And I'm like, yes, I am. It's all out there. I've not seen it. Well, they're like, where? Oh, under this stove? Really?
Well, it's kind of to Susanna's point, right?
You should hire someone.
You need somebody that has the presence, right, and says, here's the food, right?
Because if it's, can direct, yeah.
Right, because for you, it's always going to be just a side thing that you're doing just because it needs to get done. Whereas if you pay somebody to do the food, right, then they're going to make sure that people get to eat it, right?
Right.
So let's switch gears briefly. We're talking about kind of the crew, right? So the question is, how do you collaborate with your crew, including the cinematographer, editor, production designer, everyone, to achieve the aesthetic goals that you have for your film? Susanna, why don't you go ahead?
Well, I go in pretty buttoned down in terms of planning. When I write a script, the next step for me is to do a complete set of storyboards. And I'm pretty happy, for example, with Flag Act, if you sat down with the storyboards and watched the film with the storyboards, it tracks. Framing tracks, placement of the actors in the frame tracks. So I'm going in pretty tight. That said, though, having the opportunity to collaborate on set with people feeling free to come and ask about ideas, share ideas, deploy ideas, whether it's, I mean, because I'm not a gearhead, but most cinematographers are. Mm, and right. So I'm depending on the cinematographer to, you know, choose the lens, choose the depth of field, choose the sort of the lighting, but in collaboration with, okay, let's make sure the room is warm in terms of its sort of emotional visual timbre. But, you know, I've had actors say to me, I'm really surprised that you let people come talk to you about what their ideas are. I'm like, why? Why? I mean, you just have to own the decision.
Right.
You can say, thank you, I love that. Or, you know what, that kind of deviates from where we're going with this. This is a 10-minute film. And so, for example, I think it's the last line in the movie is from the good cop, in quotes. And he actually the actor changed the way that he addressed the other officer from how it was written, and it was better. And the woman who was doing DIT, and she was also going to be the editor, she basically came storming out of the house and said, he changed the line. And I said, you're right, he did, and it's better. And I think if you're open to integrating ideas from the people that you're working with, one, it increases their sense of investment in the project, and it makes the project better. I mean, you make everything about the project. Mm-hmm. It's not about my ego. It's not that I'm the director and I wrote it, blah, blah, blah. Technically the producer, because I am making everything happen. But to really value the ideas that are coming in, that's part of the fun.
Right, and that's why you have them there, right? That's why you get experts in each of those areas, is because you want them to lend their expertise. And so I have always had the opinion that collaboration always makes the best product. And so if you have a collaborative mindset and you listen to what people are saying, like you said, you don't always have to take what they're saying, right, and use it. But being able to listen and be open to ideas is so key. And even with other projects, I even notice, like, with some of my favorite songs are collaborations, right? And it's because everybody's being able to contribute their part, you know?
Right.
For my film, for Becoming, you know, Zach Moore, I mean, he from Coastal Creative, he did the filming, and he, like, it would not have come out as good if he didn't lend all of his expertise about lighting and all the technical aspects of the cinematography itself.
Right.
It was so incredibly helpful and really helped guide everything that happened. And I shared sort of my vision with him, and we had a lot of conversations about it, so he knew where my mind was. And the product was visually stunning because we were able to lean into that expertise. Because I'm like you, I'm not super, when you tell me an f-stop or whatever, I have no idea, like, what's gonna look good or what's not. So that really helped. Mace, what about you?
I think you all have to be on the same wavelength. You have to be best friends with your DP, for sure. It's kind of like doing a duet. You have to be in the same, you have to be in sync with what you want. And with everybody, but your DP especially, because you guys are going to be working hand in hand and having a shot list, obviously, like you said, that's key. I've been there with half a shot list and never again. It's so important to have that, but to sit down with your DP and pre-plan months, even, I don't know, years ahead of time, however long you need, but to make sure that you guys are visualizing, maybe not the exact same thing, but something very close. And I think, too, getting the whole crew to not only understand your vision, but to share the passion for your vision. And that's hard to do, because it's like, it's your movie, and this is the cliche, no one cares about your movie but you, right? But you have to get other people to care about your movie.
Yeah.
And when I had the crew all meet in North Carolina in this creepy house, everyone's meeting for the first time. I have like 20-something people in the room, and they all hated me because I said, let's sit down, let's read my script together. And 2 hours later, we finished it. But everyone had all these ideas, right? Oh, for this scene. Because you know how many people didn't actually read this script? I think it's so important. Like, even the makeup artist, the effects artist, he was only there for 2 or 3 scenes. He read the whole script, because everything is a device that leads into the next scene. Everything has to mean something, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to be pretentious about it. There's got to be symbolism everywhere. Not everything has a purpose. If everyone is on the same page about what that purpose is, it's going to turn out so much better. And I apply the same to my actors. I talk to all of them individually and get their perspective. I'm open to collaboration too. And I want to know what their perspective of the character is before I tell them what I was going for, because sometimes I'm like, oh, I like that. I don't want to plant them any ideas before I hear what they received, because if they feel something different, I feel like the performance could be improved. It could be better, maybe, right, if they are feeling, you know, this way over this way. And when you're too, I guess, critical about what you want exactly, is when I wrote the script, I even I wrote movements and stuff that really weren't necessary. Like, I realized this is just too particular. And
yeah, you don't want your actors to feel like sock puppets.
There you go. Yeah,
you know, like, you're not playing Barbie with them, right?
Exactly. Yeah, to give them some freedom and leniency with that. And also, the most important thing, I think, and maybe this is just common sense, but I think a lot of young filmmakers have to understand, is when you write a script, you have to make sure that every character has a purpose and a motive, because those are the two things that I think are so important. You have to know where you're going, how it's going to end, and what each character's motive is. Because even if they are just there for comedic relief, they all have a motive. They all have something that they want. And that's how I write everybody, so that I don't have extra fluff and crap that I think is... And then someone reads it and they're like, this means nothing to me. It doesn't matter. I needed people to tell me that, to understand how to do it. You know what I mean? And I'm so glad they did. I think tough love is important in filmmaking. And yeah,
it's also interesting that you're pointing out the challenges of your film that had a pretty large cast, right? Like, my whole crew was like 5 people. So it was a lot easier to get everybody on board. I was able to explain my whole vision to them, and they all loved it, you know, but working with a whole cast has got to be something else. But yeah, my crew, they were great. Everybody, I mean, even, you know, my stylist of Little Bull For You, she goes by Little Bull For You. I think she still does a lot of styling and fashion design work. Even her help and her opinions were so insightful and helpful. And she thought of things that I never thought of.
Mm-hmm.
It was really important to listen to the whole crew. But yeah, getting together. How many people were in your whole crew for that film?
I think it was 20-something.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah. It's a lot of energies, too. It's a lot of, like, people are going to clash, you know? That's just how it is, especially with artists. There's a lot of dominant personalities. And there's so many different types of people. Having all these people in a room together, some, you know, people are going to talk, some have different opinions, some of them can't stand each other. And I think, like... So another thing that I won't be doing in the future is, if I have any type of issue with anything, I don't want my crew to know that. Just the person I think can solve the problem. Definitely separating that, like, not letting people know, obviously be open with them, but they absorb the energy. If you are stressed out about something, or someone didn't show up, or this isn't going to work out, everyone wants to throw their opinions in. People start talking over each other. It can get tense so quickly, especially when everyone's passionate, because I don't always think it's ego or whatever. I think it's passion. A lot of it's passion, and it can be misinterpreted sometimes. Like, it's hard with communication. So anyway, that's something I'm, like, super big on. I guess I'm, like, segueing into another topic, but I feel like that's probably the most important thing, is just having an open communication with people in general, just not even just about the film and collaborating, just having a way to neutralize things.
Sounds like you're talking about leadership.
Yes. Thank you for summing that up for me. Yeah, I was like, oh, what's the word? Yes, leadership.
Yeah, and you can exert authority.
Yes.
To, like, bring it down a notch. I've used it a couple of times where the energy is high and it's not negative necessarily. Of course, it works for negative energy too, but to just say, okay, let's everybody take a deep breath for a minute, okay? And you hit pause, take a deep breath, and then okay, everybody go.
You would handle it? Does it work for you? I'm curious.
It has worked. I think part of the reason that the sets that I've been on have been successful, part of it is age. I'm 60. And so there's a certain authority that you can exert. Now, as a 60-year-old woman, you can also get dismissed very easily.
Mm-hmm.
But I go in pretty strong in terms of confidence. I, on the one hand, I know what I'm talking about. I also am not shy about indicating what I don't know. And I don't let that necessarily color somebody's opinion of me. If they're gonna think I'm an idiot because I don't know something, I can live with that. That's on them. Because I'm learning. I want to learn from you as much as you want to learn from me. And so, you know, to take responsibility for keeping the energy at least productive. I mean,
yeah.
Negative energy can be productive.
It can
too,
be, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think everybody wants to enjoy the work that they're doing and not feel like they're getting jerked around by somebody in a different department, or
yeah,
that they're feeling bullied or mutinied against, or whatever. And so, you know, just indicating that you are onto everything that's going on as much as you can be.
And having an assistant director, obviously, a lot of times
huge.
They can,
huge.
They're supposed to handle a lot of that. That was something great that I had at my last film. I had an AD, and he was awesome, and it was his first feature film. And
it's a huge difference.
It was amazing. He had a few panic attacks, but in private with me.
And, way to do him.
Yeah, he was great. He was great. He was honestly, like, my biggest supporter, and I just met him, too. And it's hard, especially, I was 20 when I did this. There was all these people who were older than me, and there was some conflict on set, and I have to guide them anyway. Oh.
Well, this is, the last question is, what is your process for casting actors, and how important is it to build a strong ensemble cast?
I've worked with casting directors, and I've been working long enough to have made the transition from in-person casting calls to this total domination of self-tapes. And both are useful. It's interesting working with a casting director, though, who will send it. I'm remembering the casting director sending in somebody for one role, and the producer and I were like, well, she's actually more for the other role. And she was amazing in the role that we cast her in. And self-tapes can be kind of revelatory because you'll get somebody reading something that you've written in a way that you haven't anticipated. So that part's pretty fun. But working with actors to cast other actors, you know, whether it's, you know, someone that you've already cast, pulling somebody else in can be fun and useful, or that they're part of a community that you're not necessarily part of because they're all actors and they know each other and they have professional connections and social connections. I mean, that part is really useful. My casts have tended to be smaller, and so the rapport between the actors is really important. And like in Hatboxes, there was built-in awkwardness in the script. And we had one actor who was super, super trained. And the other actor was more instinctive. And it worked really well because of the awkwardness that was in the script itself. And so that was not something that I anticipated. And that was really fun. But working with really skilled actors is so much fun. Oh my God, that's so great.
What makes it fun?
That they have so much control over their voices and their bodies, that they really treat their person as an instrument. And I have so much respect for that. And the fact that, like in Flag Act, I don't think you ever really know for sure, that the main character knows exactly what is going on. You think it's probable, but she may also just be sort of a hippie.
Kooky.
Yeah, hippie. And there are these layers of energy. I'm pretty sure she knows what she's doing.
Yeah. I know exactly the kind of feeling that you're describing, because I also felt it too when I was watching it.
Good.
Right.
Good.
And especially in the beginning. And then towards the end, I'm like, she knows exactly what she's doing. Come on.
Right.
She knows what she's doing.
But no dummy.
Right. But in the beginning, you're like, oh, this is just, you know, kooky hippie type of person, you know. But then towards the end, you're like, oh, no, she knows what she's doing. Like,
and that sort of ambiguity, I love that ambiguity. And it wouldn't have happened without Kate Young. I mean, she really brought it. And, you know, we did have a day of rehearsal beforehand. And, you know, she was able to go sort of out over here and out over here and out over here. And then we steered it, the producer and I and Kate, you know, all working together on her part. And it that part, that she was open to being directed, was as much fun as my being open to what she brought to it. So it really was a collaboration.
Mace, what about you?
I've noticed that with a lot of independent amateur films, the best actors are the people that I've seen with less experience usually. And I don't know why that is. Sometimes these people forget what it's like to react as a person. And it seems theatrical to me. Maybe this is a controversial opinion, but I think it's so important to find actors that will obviously take on the role of their character and take on that persona. I think, like, having a natural response to things and not having it all predetermined. And sometimes my actors surprise themselves with the way that they respond to things. I like to put a lot of time into my scenes. I like to explore, like, different options with the way that the actors can can treat the situation so that I have more to look at. And I'm an editor too, so I'm looking at it from an editor's perspective. And maybe the next 10 years I'll have a completely different opinion, right? But I've noticed that the people that I cast in another feature film I just edited for a submission for the Sunscreen Film Festival, the actors that had less experience were just, I don't know, I felt like they gave more of a performance because they still had like that stuff they hadn't learned yet. They weren't thinking about what am I going to do next. They just did whatever was natural to them. So that's all my experience with casting. I haven't worked with casting directors yet, and I'm really interested in how that works. I feel like spending a lot of time on casting is probably something that I want to do in the future, and I've learned from at this point.
And Susanna, you mentioned earlier that if you had cast the roles differently, it would have sent a completely different message, right? If you had, for example, if you had reversed your two cops, right?
Right.
Their ethnicity would have made such a difference in the words they were saying, right? And,
right.
And so you do have to be cognizant of those things when you're casting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I didn't want to create a situation that felt really unlikely.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was race conscious,
right?
The casting was.
Yeah.
I think it would be irresponsible to pretend that it could be race blind.
That says a lot, right? I think that says a lot. I think people are very critical of casting in films these days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I think what you're saying is, it really gets to the point of it, right? It is important how you're casting and who people are, what their ethnicity is, or what their background is. For my short 5-minute film, Becoming, I had one guy, so I didn't have to do a whole lot of casting, right? But
how did you find him?
Through the Arts Alliance,
oh,
the
nice.
St. Peter Arts Alliance. Helen, who is the, I guess, director of Beacon, a dance, Helen Friend. I was talking to her about it, and I needed somebody that could dance, but could also do the choreography. Those are skills. They're
right.
Very specific skills. I can't just pull somebody off the street. And when she actually asked me, she's like, oh, are you imagining a woman or a man for this role? And I said, well, you know, I was... in my brain, I was imagining a woman, but I'm open. And she's like, I have a young African-American man who would do this so well. And he's, you know, he's up and coming. He's got like a bright future. And his style of dance would work very well for what you're trying to do. And I met him and he understood my vision. And he also had a project that dealt with similar themes of mental health and things like that. So it just worked out really well. I got really lucky. You know, to find somebody that shares your vision when that person is the only person on the screen the whole time is really important.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, again, I got lucky, but it was very, very important that I found the right person for that.
And he's beautiful. And his dance is beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Very stunning. Very stunning. All right. Well, on that note, I think we should end Filmmakers Roundtable. If you enjoyed listening to us talking about film and filming, this is Domenico Pondoriero, and I've been here with Susanna Darwin and Mace Walker talking about film. Tune again into our next episode right here on Filmmakers Roundtable on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM.